certainly are happy to be here today to again rejoice in the God of our salvation and what he has done for us. I think it's amazing how fast the week has gone by, and we certainly have enjoyed and are enjoying getting to know you all and being with you all. Thank you for blessing our lives. I guess it's somewhat traditional for an evangelist to bring a message on the home on Sunday morning, and I would like to keep in that tradition, have been led to do that. But I invite you to 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, as a text for home life. Doesn't mention home, doesn't say anything about the house or husband or wife, but it says a lot about it. And the title of the message is Bringing Up Our Families, Our Children with Moral Virtue. Verse 3, according as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness, through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue. I really enjoyed that first devotions this morning. The scepter is always out. God is always ready to give resources. I just kind of backed up and made a few points out of that. You know, life will always have problems. But the problems are to drive us to a resource higher than our own power. And when we come to God, we'll find out that he wants us to come. In fact, the last thing I wrote down out of that devotions today is that God lets us have these little problems, big problems, huge issues in the first place, because he wants us to see how much we need him. This verse says that his divine power gives us everything that pertains to life and godliness. He is our answer. And I believe that this morning. I believe the older I get and the more I see about life that the Bible is the answer. And may I also say the experts with the capital letters behind their names that know how to what you're supposed to do for children, they don't have the answers. Unless they're getting it out of this book. The more we go and find the answers in the book, the way God put together, his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue. I'll read this from the Amplified. For his divine power has bestowed upon us all things that are requisite and suited to life and godliness, through the full personal knowledge of him who has called us by and to his own glory and excellence, his virtue. Now, none of us has moral virtue in ourselves. And I haven't made much about what happens in conversion. I thought about it saying something last night before talking to the youth. I gave them points on how to be blessed. And afterward, I was disappointed in myself that I had forgot to bring that out, that, you know, I didn't say anything about what happens when you come to Jesus and in brokenness experience a new birth, and he gives you a new heart and a new nature, something to work with, and the change that the Spirit brings from inside out. And I felt like I was kind of been lacking that in this series, because finally, try harder, we can't do it. You know, be better, we can't do it. The moral excellence and the virtue that comes is first of all something that he has. God is a holy God. We can't come to him just with our own holiness. We have to come in brokenness. But he calls us by and to. When I've actually prepared this title first to give to a group of Spanish, and I wanted to use the Spanish Bible, but it says, in our version, it says it has called us to glory and virtue. But in their version, it says it calls us by glory and virtue. God's glory and His virtue, His just absolute moral goodness, is a call to us. So I looked it up in Amplified, and it says, has called us by and to His own virtue. So He has the virtue, but He wants us to have it. And I thought about this. I thought about a family that you're impressed with until you get too close, and then you find it's rotten at the core. You know, that's so sad. It's like one of those big old oak trees, or maybe oak's not the one, right one, I don't know, but it looks good, and yet it's hollow. It's all rotten. It's no good of any value. Moral, God wants to call us, provide for us. He wants families that are filled with His glory and His virtue. And the more you get to know Him, the more goodness is there all the way through. But you know how it is. As mothers and fathers, we feel very, very overwhelmed and hardly able to do all that. Now, I have a little handout that I would like to kind of divide this up into two. And I'd like to give the fathers and family heads, the parents, the first little handout. And I'm not sure. Maybe we can call on you. Let's see, is this Stephen here? Justin, how about you? Come up and give this out to the family heads. And let's give something to follow. And then a little later on, we're going to get to the parenting and seasons of life, and I'll pass that out later. And when I think about the moral virtue, I do want to think about chastity. I want to think about pure fathers and pure mothers and pure teenagers and pure children. Children who have been taught and who are living in virtue. That's what virtue means, moral virtue. And along with virtue comes productivity. It comes the ability to be involved in something that's useful and value. Now, the first word in this title that I have here is training. And training means to develop habits. As fathers and mothers, we develop habits and thoughts or behavior by discipline and by instruction. You are already giving your children habits. You have a couple left over? Maybe your dad wants one. I forgot to give Claire that. And offer them to the ladies, the moms here too. I think there might be enough. It's not that the rest of you can't look at it, but it's especially prepared for the adults here. You want to offer it to the moms over here too? Thank you. Sorry about calling on you in the spur of the moment there. We will give our children habits. And habits are hard to break. And either they'll be good habits or they'll be bad habits. And I had to think about concrete and about how much I used to worry as a young cement finisher. I got into the business and I hadn't really been trained from little up in that. And I worried about those big pours. And then I found out that to pour concrete, you just do the right thing at the right time. You break it down in little jobs. You get the concrete out and rough it. And then back then we didn't have pumps. And then we didn't have power screeds either. Then we had to screed it off. And the right thing at the right time. And then the next thing you did was bull float it, and that works the stones down, the cement up. And then after it got hard enough, then you'd get on it and either hand trowel it or trowel it off of the machine. And when it was all done, you just did the little thing at the right time, and it wasn't really complicated. And I spent nights worrying about how to do this. But I still look at a concrete job, and I say, uh-oh, they troweled that too soon. Or they didn't get on that in time. You know, you can see by the way it's set what the mistakes of the finishers were. And it's usually because they didn't know what they were doing. And I thought about something that's even more complicated than finishing concrete. And that's to make a cake. To me, making a cake is extremely complicated. I do not know how in the world that you would have a cake there with icing on it. But I have the idea that it may be just as simple if you just break it down into steps and get the ingredients out, and do you kind of mix it dry at one point, and over here you mix something wet, and at the right time you put it together, and then you put it. But for me, I'm afraid I'd put it in the oven first, or, you know, get it. And you, it's extremely complicated. Well, raising children is so much the same way. If you know what to do, a little bit that you do at the right time, and follow the directions, and do what you're told, and that's what we'd like to talk about this morning. And I really do believe that the Bible has the directions for that. So I'd like to just start with the marriage a little bit. I'd like to start with the fact, a foundational concept, and that it is God's plan. It's God's plan. And we need to be solid on that. We need to be solid on the fact that it was God's, in his mind, to bring a man and a woman. And let's just take a man and a woman. For the men here that are married, he designed you. And then while you were even unaware of it, he was making the woman that he brought into your life and put you all together. He did that. And he enables you, and he holds you responsible. The preacher at conference had a little illustration, and I want to bring that out this time. One morning, I was supposed to preach at Providence, and I got thinking about his plumbing pipes. The evangelist's wife had gotten sick, and she couldn't finish up. And they asked if I would. So I ran out to the shop and thought I'd just find a simple plumbing pipe and fitting to. And I don't have anything like that. I'm not a plumber, and I don't understand plumbing. But I did find something that was out in my shop. And right here, I have a piece of stainless steel, and it says Silver Mist American Moistening. And I knew what this was as soon as I saw it. And then I looked over, and I found this same piece in the box. And it doesn't have anything written on it, but it is bronze, or certainly has some copper in it. I believe it's a bronze piece with a valve on. And then as I looked at these two, I realized that this one was made for this one, and this was made for this. And as you join them together, they become something that neither one could be all by itself. Now I want to ask you something. Which is the more important piece that's involved in this? Which is the most important piece that's involved in this? Which one is it? Is it this one? Or is it this one? I call this the man, because this one here is always full of hot air, according to this one. And this one over here is all wet, according to this one. You know? But which one, which personality, is there another personality other than the two that are here? Is there another personality? Uh-huh. There is another person. There's the person who designed these and brings them together, because he has a purpose for this. The person who designed, it wasn't me, but I did bring it together. There are other people that are involved, but the one who designed it is the most important. And his will and wish for them is what is most important. What if this one decides, well, instead of being a mister for a wood shop, and that's what this is, what if they decided, we want to be a light bulb instead? Is this unit here, the way it was, is it doing today what it was designed to do? No, it's not. And there's another reason why. Because there's an air connection that belongs on here. And it needs a constant supply, not just a tweak every once in a while, but it needs a constant supply of air pressure. And over here is a place where a pipe would fit on, and this one needs a constant supply. And so both of them need a constant supply from an outside source. But then they can do for the constant supply what the constant supply can't do by itself. What if you have an air leak in your shop and a water leak at the same time? Does that do what you need done in a shop? Of course not. That's a disaster. But with this little bit of engineering and design and being brought together, then it can do the job that is needed. And when I think about our Almighty Heavenly Father and the fact that He designed both and He brings us together, He was designing my wife and I didn't even know it. I didn't even know who she was, just like Eve. And he was designing me, and she didn't even know. And he brought us together. And are we alike? Oh, no. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of people that, when they get married, you just naturally are alike in a lot of ways. Well, that didn't happen to us. We try not to call each other names, but we realize we had to come to the place where we realized that it was our differences, the fact that we were so different, that made us even worth anything. You know, that's why two men and two women being married is a total reproach to the Maker. This has some falls down in some ways, but I kind of liked it, because when they're joined together and they're being productive, they're doing what the designer wanted them to do, that's whenever they are bringing virtue and honor. My wife and I, in our early days, faced this question about having children. And, you know, we finally got to the place where we said, there's somebody bigger than us who knows what he wants in 30 years. We don't know that. There's somebody bigger than us that brought us together for a bigger plan. And are we going to fit into that, or aren't we? And so we made it a matter of prayer and allowed the Lord, ask him to do for us, do through us whatever he wanted. Modern experts do not have the answer for our problem. And only God can be that constant supply to make you productive in the thing that he calls you to. I would just like to highlight, too, that virtue grows in an atmosphere that's like God wants it to be. And I'm just going to keep that really, really short this morning. But if there's a home where there's tension, there are unresolved differences, where problems are not addressed, where people don't take the place that they're called to, you cannot expect children to come out of that. Well, I don't want to say this morning that children can't help who they become, but on the other hand, a home that is vexed because there are other goals. Now, it's one thing if God clearly calls you to care for a handicapped child, and that takes a lot of time. I understand that. But it's another thing if mom decides, well, dad's never going to amount to anything, so I'm going to build a big business. Or dad decides, I'm going to make a lot of money and mom can raise the children. If you have another goal to be something other than God has called you to be, then somebody's going to suffer. And I've seen it many times, many, many times, and it hurts many ways. In our little outline here, I would just like to spend a little time, too, in understanding the nature of the child. This morning, the experts have it all wrong. The Bible has it right. Children are created in the image of God with the ability to develop an intimate spiritual relationship with him. And I love how that if you teach your children about Jesus, they're soon praying. And God, they're soon praying. And they're talking. And he is real to them. There's something inside a child. Jesus said, the Bible says, this is the true light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Jesus called unto them and said, suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of God. Brethren, be not children in understanding, howbeit in malice be ye children, but in understanding be men. God puts a nature in every human being. And you can teach your children at an early age to pray and to talk to God and to listen to God. You can do that. And that's a beautiful thing. Don't miss out on that, because that's part of their nature. However, the Bible also tells us that children have a fallen Adamic nature, a human nature that is ugly. And that ugly nature, it says here, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. I didn't know how to apply that until we had children. And after we had children, I found out that even babies tell lies. Their diapers change. They have a full tummy. They're tired. They should lay down. And they act like there's something terribly wrong with them. They do not lay there and say, I wonder if mom is available right now and if she would come and give me a little hug. They start yelling as if there's something terribly wrong. And so you get in a panic and you go running in there and you check them out. And there's nothing wrong with them. They're doing just fine. They lie as soon as they're born. There's none righteous, no, not one. And it isn't just then. Little up, deception is bred into them. It's in there. They are little deceivers. They are little liars. They're little criminals. That's their nature. Now, we understand that. And so when that little two-year-old, I tell you what, there's a stage they go through when they're just so cute. It seems like they're charming and cute and captivating all in one. And then there's a little stage after that, after you've been doting over them, and that whole ugly side comes out. It is repulsive and obnoxious and difficult, depending on how strong-willed the nature of the child is, too, how strong it is. And you've got to relate to both, and that's what we're going to be talking about here, because you have both positive and negative tools to work with. Well, I'd like to hand this out now. Anybody that can get the other paper is welcome to take one of these. Can you help us again? Thank you very much. Oh, let me give one to Brother Claire. You don't need it. It's very small on the little handout I've already passed out, but if you could make that available to anybody who wants one. Thank you. That's maybe you can get a helper there to pass out to the boys while you do the girls or something like that. I would like to talk about parenting in the seasons of life. Because just like when you're making a cake, you start with, do y'all start with the dry ingredients? Get the recipe book out, but do you start with the dry ingredients? Or I know it's complicated, but is it the wet ingredients or the egg and milk? Or is it the, whichever way, you get both of them. You get your ingredients. Go ahead and pass it out to all the girls. They'll enjoy that too. You start with this, and you get it ready, and you start with this, and then you get it ready, and then you mix it together and get the pan ready and all that. I just want to talk about raising children. I think that's more simple than to get a cake ready. Concrete, that got easy too. But, when you're finally done, it's not the time to just be starting on it. You know, you need to do the right thing at the right time, and that's what we want to talk about. In the infant stage, I want to talk about babies now. In the infant stage, whether you're looking at the chart or whether you're looking at the outline here, it's so natural, it's so easy to do this, but it's the stage to win their heart. It's the time to give them your heart, and it's kind of natural, but it also can be very difficult. Thank you, boys. Thank you so much for being of service here, taking care of this. When you have this tiny little baby, they come helpless. I remember when our first child was born, and she came. She had a pretty strong personality, and she cried a lot. And she took over our schedule. She did. She just... my wife and I used to just basically get ready and go to church, and all of a sudden this became a very complicated affair. It was just the way it was. She landed with a crash. But in this infant stage, it's your job to win her heart and to cuddle her. And I thought maybe something was terribly broken. It wasn't. That was just her package. That's just the way she was, okay? And if babies are yellers and take a lot of time, love them. And if they are sweet and cooing, a lot of times it seems like God gives those after you've had the other kind. I don't know. He gives them both ways. But whenever whatever they are, it's your job to win their hearts. They're helpless and without self-control. And your selfishness will be confronted. I've always said that God gives you parents to raise you, but then he'll give you children to finish the job because they are so helpless. And you have to be very unselfish and just care for them again and again. Their goal is to lay a foundation of free and open communication. As you talk to that baby, this is one of my regrets, that sometimes I would get a little upset if I felt like my wife was holding the babies and talking to them too much, and too many of the other jobs didn't get done. We even had that little motto that says something like... I'm rocking my baby and babies don't keep. How's it start? Cleaning and scrubbing can wait for tomorrow. For babies grow up, I've learned to my sorrow. So quiet down, cobwebs and dust go to sleep. I'm rocking my baby and babies don't keep. Listen, man, when your wife is rocking the baby and pouring her love into that child, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I would sometimes sneak up behind her and hear her talk to the baby. And so we want you to grow up to be a disciple of Jesus, and we want you to love the Lord. And she'd look into his eyes. And you know, Dad, it's for you to do that too. You look in their eyes. And that was something that was so neat to me, because when we have a baby and you'd talk to it, he would try to find your eyes, even at a very first hours. It seemed like they already knew you. Now when we have a little baby comes from our grandchildren, and I hold it and look at it, I'll talk to it, and he looks like he wants to look everywhere but at me, you know. He doesn't know me yet. He doesn't look for my eyes. But it's that bonding that's already happening, and it's a beautiful time. It's a beautiful time. Now, toddlers. Toddler stage, as we come to this stage here, and you look at it, I don't know. It seemed like maybe 9 months for some, and 14, 16 months for another, a year and a half. But the toddler stage is a season to train your child to hearken. Hearken means to give respectful attention. Before a child can learn, before you can tell them things, they have to be trained to listen. Do you have to tell your children to be naughty? No. Can you tell them to be good? It won't do any good. Maybe we'll just talk about the character traits that are inside of a child. Every child, when they're born, a fool, simple, or a scorner. Book of Proverbs tells us about this. A fool is one who has not been trained to accept direction outside of his own will. He may have been scolded, he may have been fussed at, he may have been abused, but he has not been taught to listen. A timid fool will sulk and pout when you give him direction. A bold fool will rebel. The fool believes in the supremacy of his own ideas, but he will not listen when he is told. He gets mad at the person who tries to tell him. Simple is one who's not been taught about the consequences of living after the flesh. His curiosity leads him to experimentation, his experimentation to lifelong habits and addictions. The parent is to teach him who he is, what his body is, and what he will become. And it's your job to be that instructor, because he will find out, and if he becomes instructed by the wrong person. So you teach him about his body, you teach him what's public and what's private and what proper names are. And you do this at an age even before he remembers, as you talk to him. But now, if a person is left to be a fool, he will always be somewhat simple, because he will learn, but he will not learn because you told him. In other words, what I'm saying is you condition the child to hearken to your voice. I know my father used to say this. Now, Stevie, did you hear? Well, of course I heard, but he wasn't asking me if it went in one ear and out the other. He was asking me if it went in my ear and was changing the way I was going to act. And then, of course, the scorner is one who knows to do better, but he influences and victimizes others, leading them into a sinful lifestyle. This is a scorner. And these kind of people still live today. They're around. I'm just telling you a little story. Maybe you heard me tell this story before. The difference, and you can always tell, even when they're grown up, whether a person is a fool or not. Proverbs 9 says, if you rebuke a fool, he will hate you. But if you rebuke a wise man, he will love you. I didn't make these things happen, but it happened, and I'll try to tell the story in a right kind of a way. But I had a daughter who was teaching school. And I found out that there was a young man who was hanging around her room. He was another teacher, and he'd go there and he'd talk to her after school. And I found out that he would hang around her in the volleyball games. And one person came and told me about this, and somebody else came and told me about this, and my wife asked me about this. And after a while, I realized that, you know what, there's a young man stealing my daughter's heart. And he doesn't have my permission to do that. And that means something. So I went to him, and I'd like to say that I'm nice and charming and I'm sweet, but I know I had a little bit of attitude when I went to talk to him. And I told him, this is not going to work. If you're going to court my daughter, you got to go through me first. You got to have permission. And he, as I told him that, I didn't know how it was going to go. But a few weeks later, I had to smile because I didn't tell my daughter about this, but I heard her saying to one of her sisters, I don't know what's going on, but this person said his name, he totally ignores me. He acts like I don't even exist. We can be playing volleyball together, and if I say something, he won't even talk to me. I don't know what has happened. And it was just kind of funny. And then after a while, we had another interview. We worked out a time. And then he called me, and then he went past the time when he was, nothing happened. And finally one day, he called me. We had had our talk, and he had permission. He said, I can't wait any longer. I was going to wait till such and such time. Can I court your daughter? I said, yep, you can. Yes, sir, you can date her. And it went on, and they're married today. It was just a very interesting experience for me. There was another young man that I began to find out he was paying attention to my daughter, and I don't know about this because I found out that she would get some text, get some emails. And she came and asked me. She said, "I'm a little curious. I don't know what to do about this. Should I be texting him back or not?" And so I had a conversation with him too. And I'm not saying this morning that I did that one exactly right, but I didn't have more feelings than the other time. I know that. But I told him, I said, that's not going to work. If you want to communicate to her, you got to get the clearance from me first. And we got to have a sit down. We got to talk about some things. And we're going to have to talk about this. And, I could tell that didn't work. He got all bristled up and he got angry, and pretty soon he left the church. And then I got a call from his mom one day, and she told me that it was my fault because I wasn't really nice to him when I talked to him and all of that. And I just went right back to Proverbs 9 again. You know, when you rebuke a fool, he'll hate you. But if you rebuke a wise man, he'll love you. But you know when that starts? Did you ever try to spank a child in school who had never? These school teachers know about this. When they want to discipline a child who's not used to discipline, they got a real problem on their hand. But if you discipline a child who's used to it at home, they'll just buckle right down, they'll accept it, and they'll be sweet. Now let's talk about how this happens. Inside this little criminal, inside his psyche, and I have on page 9 here a list of these big words. I thought maybe I'd pull them out and write them down. Narcissism, entitlement, pragmatism, anarchy, irresponsibility, and instant gratification. These are just nice big words for playing down selfishness. And they're in every child. Now, there's some children, they're kind of low-key and hidden. And there's others, it's just out and obnoxious. But this is a normal child. Whether they are limited intellectually or whether they are geniuses, all of them have this. This is normal. Narcissism means I am the center of the universe. You know, we had an old man that I was acquainted with, actually worked for me for a while, and he had a real anger problem. You couldn't tell him what to do. And they finally hauled him off to an expert, and he gave him a psychiatric evaluation and came back and said that he's affected with the narcissistic disorder. He was affected with a narcissistic disorder. So they prescribed some kind of a treatment for him, and he just got meaner and meaner. It worked for a while. They couldn't believe how nice he was. But the last thing he did before he died, his wife offered him a drink of water. His mouth was so dry, he couldn't go get water for him. And he got that look of anger on his face, and he tried to swat her hand away from him. And then he died. Now, how do you feel about somebody like that going out into eternity? It is so sad. But we're all born with that, okay? Can I just say that? And you know, if you had a parent who was wise enough and kind with to bring out the old tool that needs to be worked with this. I brought a stick along today again, children. And this is a paddle. You've probably seen one. And I've got some a little longer than this. I've got one for any parent that wants them. I brought them along. Some are bigger. Some are little enough to fit in a stick. But the kindest thing that you can do with a narcissistic child is help him to realize he's not the center of the universe. The whole world doesn't revolve around him or the things that he's interested. Now, you watch this little 2-year-old. We get to watch it in our grandchildren. We have one. He was just the cutest little guy that you ever want. Smart as a whip. Say things at the right time. But these five things here have, six things, have laid a hold on him in a way that is given this little paddle. These little paddles are a real workout. It's just interesting to see how he went from that to this. And mama and aunts and grandma even, we all have to be involved in that. But entitlement means if I want it, I deserve it. And if a child says, oh, I played with that last time I was here, I own it, it's mine. Whatever they think everything is theirs if they want it. Pragmatism. And that is that because I'm entitled to it, I whatever it takes to get it, whether it's manipulation, intimidation, or right stealing, or whatever it is, any way I can get it, I deserve to have it. And anarchy. Oh, that little granddaughter a couple of weeks ago, she looked up at me and she said, you're not my boss. I don't have to listen on you. And it just had flashbacks of our children telling their grandmas that. Anarchy. No authority has the right to stop me. Well, guess what? Grandfather didn't quite see things that way. And it almost came down to this thing here. Almost came down to a paddling, but she buckled up and got out of there. But I kind of think it's about to happen soon. Kind of think so. Because with me and with that kind of an attitude, there's bound to be a collision pretty soon. Irresponsibility. It's not my fault. I can't help it. Or instant gratification. I deserve the pleasure I want now. What we want in children is them to be unselfish, for them to wait their turn, for them to be open with their request and say, may I have it? And if they can't, to accept it, to listen on all authority, and to take responsibility and finish their jobs, or if they did wrong, to take it, and we want them to be able to delay their pleasure until later. And so you've got a job on your hand. Now, what are the tools for achieving this? Do you have to teach a child to hit, bite, fight, and disobey? Do you have to teach them to do that? No, it's in them. Can you teach them not to be that way? And the answer is no. You cannot teach them not to hit, fight, bite, and be mean to have their way. You cannot teach them to do that. But you can train them not to. Teaching means talking. Training has to happen so that teaching can work. I believe in teaching your children. Don't go home and say the preacher doesn't believe in teaching your children. But before they will listen, they have to be made to listen. And that comes in this training stage. You are not mean to a child. And then here's how it happens. Even whenever they're fairly small, they'll get to a place where they're not going to accept anything. I remember I was holding my little girl, and she was big enough, and Mama was getting ready for another one was coming, and so I'd hold her in church, and she wouldn't listen. And I'd have to. She'd start to yell, so I'd take her out. I'd come back in, take her out, come back in. It's three or four trips in an evening. And an old brother in the church came to me, and he doesn't remember. I asked him, but he did the kindest thing. He did the kindest thing. He said, I think that this child is training you instead of you training her. He said, she don't have to act like that. You know what? She can sit in church and be good the whole way through. She can do that. What? How's that happen? Well, he said, what you need to do is in family worship. Just if she starts wiggling around, just slide your hand down along her leg and start put a little pressure, a little bit of pinch. And if she kicks more, pinch a little harder. And if she kicks, keep on. And then when she starts to relax, then let go, back off. That was the first training. Because anybody who can feel can learn. Any child that can feel pain can learn. A dog, believe it or not. There are people whose dogs are better trained than their children are. But you have to be willing to confront their will, deliberate, measured pain. I learned later on, I'd hold a little boy. He'd come running out in the morning, just, you know, all sleepy. I'm sitting there drinking my coffee and reading my Bible. I must have been 40 because he'd reach up and grab my glasses and just jerk them off my face. What do? First you say no. Don't do that. Put your hand down. There are people who let their children dig in their ears and, well, I won't go there. There's no need to do that. They have to be trained that there are places they don't go, okay? And what you have to be willing to do is say no. And if they don't listen, then you just bring their hand out. And they'll just stick their hand right back up. And when they do, you snap their finger. Lower your voice a little bit. Because this is normal, okay? You snap their finger and a little bit of pain. And that first time, yeah, like you took their finger off. You didn't do that. All you did is confronted their will. And then after a while, it's, of course, grabbing for your Bible and messing up the pages. And you just say no. And they'll look at you. And then after a while, they're crawling across the floor and they want to go pull the books off the shelf. No. You lower your voice and they look at you. After a while, you just get their attention and shake your head. And they know. That's a well-trained child. I remember that happened to one young man. He was at a place where his dad was, and the child was going across the room, and she's going to pull something off, and he looked at her and said, no. And, grandfather was pretty impressed because the child looked back and crawled away from there. We got a text from our daughter the other day, my wife did, and said how that after little boy went up to the CD player and wanted to turn it on, and he started to reach up, and he looked at the button, and he shook his head no, and he pulled his hand back, and he went off and played with something he was supposed to play with. And then she said that after about 5 or 6 spankings for that exact same thing, you see, after a while, it soaks in. The problem is we have other goals, we're too busy, we think they'll get over it, and they will. After a while, they get over, but those traits, they're just hidden under a social image stage. You know what I'm saying? Yes, there's a lot of toddlers who grow up and go to school, and they act all right until you cross their will. And when you're across their will, well, I already told you the story of the simple, the scorner, the one who wouldn't listen, and the one who was a fool and the one who was a wise person. And so you use the rod. And use measured punishment. I want to talk about spankings, though. After I brought these one time to one of these little sessions and had a paddle, somebody told me, you're just joking, right? That's not a paddle. What? You don't spank with anything that little, do you? Wow, what do you use, a club? Listen, the whole goal is not to hurt or abuse or harm your child. I know the Bible talks about the blueness of the wound. I know that. Or there's a couple of things that really make it sound bad. But he also says using a rod. To use a rod. This, if you don't have a paddle, I saw that supply store over there. They have hardwood rods. And you can get one about that big around. Or you can use a switch off the tree. But don't use anything very big. Just a light so that it stings. But don't wail away on their diaper. All you do is make them mad. It has to hurt. Get them on the leg if they have a thick diaper on. But the backside, the place, you know, God's designed the human body so that there's some nerves back there that go right to the behavior part of the brain. And if you get it right here, it gets right here. And the way you know it is if you can spank them a few times, and then they'll turn, if you say, look at me. And they look at you, and they have that broken look in their eye. You know, if they're yielded. But if they refuse to look at you, you're going to have to say, well, if you won't look at me, I'm going to have to do this again. And I'm not talking about being angry. In fact, this is the answer to anger abuse. This is the answer to getting mad at your children. If you do it when they disobey you, when you see their need. And I watch this. I was 2 places where Pop got up and got the little child and carried him out back. And after a while, they came back happy. Keep it up. I like to see that. That's part of the work. You just have to do those things. So when a child is disciplined, their whole attitude changes. And when it's disciplined properly, this is what I like to see. You're sitting there on the couch or you're doing something. And the little child comes up to you and they just put their arm around your neck. Their arm around your neck, or they start to hug you, and you reach down and you hug them. Don't go out of the room while the child is crying. Take them up in your arms. If you've gotten through and they're broken, they're yielded, take them up in your arms and hug them. That's the way it should be. I remember a notable evangelist that I listened to his child training messages, and then when his children got big, there's a few of them stayed conservative, but a lot of them didn't. And so I asked one of them, I said, what happened? And they said, well, it was the way Dad corrected us. He believed that if you weren't still crying when he went out of the room, that you hadn't corrected hard enough. And I know that was his theory. Job, I know it was one of Job's friends who didn't say everything right, but he says, when the Lord God chastens you, he also binds you up. He also takes you in his arms. And it wasn't as fast as what Job's friends thought he should, but I think that's the way it should be with parents. You restore that relationship. Whenever they're infants, your job is to win their heart. And this isn't to lose their heart. It's a discipline that keeps their heart won to you, even though their evil nature is beginning to arise. Well, I guess time keeps going on. We better keep going. You know, the goal in the toddler stage is to conquer their will and train them to hearken and teach them to stand still when they're getting spanked. Obey without question, without back talk, with cheerful attitudes. You establish norms of acceptable behavior. They're thinking about others. They can learn to play quietly, to cry quietly, to sit still, to eat at proper times, behave at the table. Let me just say this. My wife and I kind of agreed not to make the dinner table or the meal time a fuss time. Maybe that was wrong. But if a child didn't want to eat or didn't cooperate too well, in that toddler stage, we didn't really work on a lot there because it seemed like too much tension at the table. A child kind of mistranslated that, and it was harder for them to eat. Believe me, all of ours ended up eating enough anyway. Just kind of give it space and take care of those at other times. Oh, I want to say this about the daughter sitting in church. After a few years and the children were sitting beside me, then after a while, somebody comes and says, I don't know what's with your children. It just seems like they're always so good at church. They must not be quite normal or something. And, oh, well, that's just let it go. Scholars, about time they head off to school. And even before this, I asked my grandchildren a couple weeks ago, well, maybe a couple months ago now, so when does that voice start talking in you about what you're doing is right or wrong? And they had a little discussion among themselves. I think the oldest one's maybe 8 or 9. They went on down a few steps, and they think maybe around 4 you start hearing that little voice inside telling you when you're doing right or wrong. I don't know. But I think that in the scholar stage is when you establish the conscience. The need is the time to develop a clean and healthy conscience. They will still get spankings, but it's no longer training them to hearken. The spankings are to clear up their conscience. And you can tell it when a child has done wrong and they can't look you in the eye. They can't be open with you. If we have walk in the light, we have fellowship one with another. But if you got stuff in your life, you don't want to face the authority. And when you sense that, but you got to be paying close enough attention that you sense it when there's something wrong. And then you find out what that is. But they need spankings then to clear that up. And a good spanking makes them feel like they paid their debt and they're free. There's times whenever you say, well, I'm going to have mercy this time and I won't spank you because you got enough of your own consequences this time. I remember doing that a time or two. I'm going to teach you about mercy. And then after a while they say, Father, could we have some more lessons on mercy this time too? And it's just kind of interesting to see. And you have the right to do that. But the whole goal is now not to train them to hearken, but to develop a healthy conscience that will talk to them so they don't do what's wrong. And this is such a beautiful time too, but you get to be more and more close to them as they develop and get closer to you and what they can do. You can put them to work. You can work with them on projects. But this is also a time when you should be talking to them about their own moral development. Okay, you've already talked to them. They learn that there are certain parts of their body that they don't show or don't let other people talk, handle, or touch, and they don't talk about with others. And you just bring the subject up with them once in a while. My boys, My wife and I have worked it out where the first chat we had was with her daughter, and I helped with that one. But it wasn't too long. She says, I can do a better job with them than you can. And that was with the girls. But my boys and I think they got after a while where they were afraid that haircutting time was when they were going to have answer time. In fact, one of our boys went from the barber chair to his knees, and he gave his heart to the Lord down at the adolescence stage. And I was so blessed by that because he just said, Father, I'm not making it. I'm getting into stuff, and I'm not handling this, and I need to become a Christian. And it was such a blessed time. I really appreciate that. But your discipline is to free the conscience. You're to be a companion with them and a partner, and you give them direction. And you can see what other things I've written down there. And pretty soon, it seems like almost overnight, they're already moving into adolescent stage. And adolescent stage is just as they begin to develop into manhood or womanhood. I really believe it's the time to tell them, look, you don't just answer to me now, you answer to Christ. And before that, I wouldn't tell them that they sinned against God. I would tell them that you have disobeyed me, and so I need to punish you. But now they're coming to a time where when they do things that are wrong, that's between them and God too. And they need to get help with this. Please, young people, you can't handle your own evil nature by yourself. It doesn't matter how many good spankings you got and how well you're trained. You need Christ in you. Because in the adolescent stage, there is something awakening in you. For you girls, you begin to notice the boys, maybe even earlier. And there's that desire for companionship that makes you vulnerable and will get you into trouble unless you have help, guidance with it along the way. And for you fellows, you're developing physically and you're thinking about the things that excite you and pleasure you. And as you do, you know, you can learn very, very bad habits. And so parents, just bring the subject up. I know when I was a dad, when our children were little, it was extremely hard to start talking about their physical development and start talking about where their real struggle was. We just acted like nobody struggled with purity. But we all knew we did, okay? Why act like something isn't there? It's better to talk about it. I started keeping a diary of who I had talked to when because we had so many boys and I wasn't sure where I would be. But I found out that if you talk to a child about some of these things and you tell him things that are he's beyond what he's ready about, the facts of life and things like that, he's not ready for them yet, that he won't even remember it. You go back later and remember our last talk. No, he didn't even remember it. Well, I want to talk about this again. Now, some people give children books, and I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but I'd rather if you want to use the book that you read it together. You know, we're going to sit down and read about this and talk about it. For me, I teach a purity class at Shepherd's Fold. I could never just go in there and teach a class, but we're reading a book together. John Covalence's Living a Pure Life. If you have a middle teen or even a lower teen or upper teen and they've gotten into things and you've never talked about, read that book together. That's all right. Because as you read things, and you tell us stories that you knew of or from your own experience, and as you warn them and you talk about this, it just opens the door for them to talk about questions that they have. But you know how it was when you were a boy or a girl. You weren't going to go and ask your mom things, you know, out of the clear blue. The neighbors were talking about stuff, and the cousins were doing stuff in the haymow, or this was going on, and you couldn't talk about it, you know. Well, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with those issues? Wherever you learn things is where that bonding happens. And if you were always able to talk about these things with dad or with mom, if you're always able to do that, then you will go and do that. And that's what you need. That's what you as parents want. That assurance that you have that connection with your child. We're talking about developing moral virtues. Okay? You don't want that impressive-looking tree with a rotten center. You don't want that putrefying decay of sin. You want something that is alive and growing and pure. That's what you want to do. As they come to, there's so many subjects to talk about, money. social interest, adolescence, as work habits, skills. As they come to youth, it's the same thing. They're now, you're equipping them. You become somebody who equips them with resources and training. You talk to them about life, about the job, but more than about the job. You talk to them about how they feel and where their own interests are and what it will be. You do have to continue to set some guidelines. And I remember, I'll tell this story yet and then I'll quit before too long. In Pennsylvania there, they kind of had the habit that you could run with the young people at 16. And I didn't feel comfortable with that. And I didn't want to set that as the standard for our family. And so I told the boys, as they, one of them was 16 already, and he was wanting to, he had got his driver license, he was wanting to do some of that. And I said, if it's mingling with, if there's girls there, I'm not going to let you go till you're 18. And they got moody about this, especially a couple of the older boys, and they kind of had an attitude about it. And I finally said, you know what, we're going to have a talk about this. And I said, I have the resources, and yet you're my good friends. But I'm at a stage, I'm not just going to give in to you, because I need to give you guidance at this time of life. And this is the way I feel about this. Now, if you work with me, then I'll feel good about helping you get driver's license, helping you have a vehicle when the time comes, helping you get into the job that you want, the kind of work that you like to do. I'll be a resource to you, but if you want to fight at this time of life, I'm not backing up. We'll just end up fighting. We're going to have war between us. I don't like this, but that's the way it's going to be, because you're going to listen on my rules when you're in my house. They said they'd think about it, and so they called me back. I remember going into the bedroom, and the two boys were in there, and one of them said this. They said, we talked it over, Father. It's what they called me. And we decided that we're going to work with you. That's your rules. But we want you to know, when we have children that are big like we are, we're not going to have stupid rules like this. We're getting really close to find out. It's getting really, really close. Well, as you move into that youth age and they have dreams for life, get them to talk about their dreams. Get them to talk about what they feel called to. I remember when my father asked me what kind of work I want to do, and he took me to a draftsman's office. I thought I wanted to be an architect. Well, I never did get there. But as you find that, as you share with your youth, and you're not fighting with them, you're helping them, you're being a resource so they can have their dreams, it'll come back to bless you, because you're partners in life at that stage. There's still some guidelines. There's some accountability they have to have. You need to know where they were. You need to know what's on their phone, something we didn't have in our day. You need to know, even when they go to court, where they are, when they're coming home, what their rules are. But I like that stage of courtship. When they come to you and talk to you, and, oh, I'm noticing this person, and I feel attracted, and I want to, would it be all right with you if I go talk to her dad? Comes the other way, and he comes and talks to you about your daughter. And you hear them out. I love those times of sharing. It's hard in a way because you're no longer controlling. You're just guiding. But you're involved and you're working together. And then there comes a time whenever you just turn them loose. They're married now. And if you would still try to control them, it would be wrong. What's so wrong is when parents want to be good buddies to that toddler and don't want to make them listen, but then they want to control them when they're big. You can't control your children anymore. There comes a time. We talked about this at Shepherd's Fold one day, and at that group of men, maybe I just hit them, but every one of those, they were all young there that time, except for one. Every one of them expressed their frustrations of dads who wanted to control them when they were big. If you control them when they were little, it won't be an issue. But if you didn't control them when they were little, you can't start then. I don't think so. This is a stage to be best friends. You share values, you share vision, and you walk together in life. And I guess that's all I have to say. God bless you and give you a lot of wisdom. It's wonderful to have children. Wonderful to be a family. Wonderful to see them grow up. We have a lot of mistakes, regrets, but I've never been sorry for the investment that we made into a family. It's been the very best investment. If you give me $5 million, I wouldn't trade it. You know, I just wouldn't trade it. Let's bow for prayer.